I was just tired of not knowing the answers to questions about tricuspid atresia as well, because I had pushed it away for so long that I hit a point where the anxiety of not knowing was worse than finding out the truth.
What can encourage a heart warrior to start learning more about her heart condition? What kind of books has Margaret Ellis Raymond written? And what's the holdup with the fourth and fifth books? Why would a heart warrior start a YouTube channel? And what can we expect to see on that channel? Welcome to Heart with Anna. I am Anna Jaworski. I am also a heart mom. My son Alexander was born with a single ventricle heart in 1994. And if you're a loyal listener, you've actually heard Alexander interviewing me. He was the guest host for episode number 300. Today's show is Margaret Ellis Raymond, author and YouTuber, and our guest is Margaret Ellis Raymond. Margaret Ellis Raymond is an author, editor, and YouTuber from Portland, Maine. She was born with tricuspid atresia and other heart defects for which she underwent 3 surgeries before the age of 3. Margaret's love of stories started early when her mother placed her in front of a tape recorder to tell stories. It was her way of occupying the talkative child while she got ready for her day. Her love of stories helped her to overcome reading difficulties, and by 5th grade, she began to tackle chapter books. As an adult, Margaret has written a series of 3 books for young children and started a YouTube channel about tricuspid atresia to educate herself and others. Her hobbies include fencing, photography, and laughing too much. Boy, she and I are right there together. One day, she hopes to write a book where the protagonist has a CHD, or congenital heart defect. She also hopes to self-publish an anthology of essays written by CHD patients, their friends, and family, as well as those in the CHD medical field. Welcome to Heart with Anna, Margaret.
Oh, thank you so much, Anna, for having me. I'm truly grateful for this opportunity to share my story.
I know, this is so much fun. But first, I want to start talking about your heart defect. Tell us a little bit more about your heart defect, like how old you were when your heart defect was diagnosed, and if you have any memories of your surgeries or hospitalizations.
I was diagnosed in utero with tricuspid atresia. My mom tells me this story when I ask. She usually doesn't share stories unless I ask her. But the ultrasound technician told my mom that she was going to take one quick look at my heart and then the appointment would be over. Well, as you can imagine, that quick look turned into a very long look, an extra technician in the room, and a follow-up appointment for the eventual diagnosis of tricuspid atresia. So, yeah, it was a lot.
That's so weird, though. I mean, one quick look, was she suspecting something, or was this just like, okay, we've looked at everything else, now let's just look at the heart?
We looked at everything else, let's just look at the heart, and then you'll be good to go.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So she really wasn't expecting to see anything bad.
No, everything else looked fine. So they were like, okay, yeah. And I'm actually the same age as your son. So I was born in 1994. Yeah.
I had ultrasounds too, but my tech wasn't as good as yours. They didn't pick anything up. So your poor mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a lot. I mean, the way my mom described it was that she was on the examination bed, and you know, the technician was like, oh, I'll just take one quick look at your baby's heart. And my mom just said she was lingering in this one spot for a really long time. And my mom kept looking at her and then looking at my father, and they were like, what's going on? What are you seeing? And they eventually asked that question, and the technician was like, hold on, I need to get a second opinion. And she called someone else in. And then that technician, who had been in the industry for a really long time, said, yep, I think we know what this is, but we need a doctor's look. And so they scheduled another follow-up appointment, and that's when the diagnosis was made.
And your poor parents had to wait, thinking, what could this be?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. They had no idea. They knew it was something with the heart, but they were like, we don't know. I think it was 2 or 3 days before they could have that appointment.
Which is torture.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm glad your mom had your dad there, because a lot of times we women go to our ultrasounds without our husbands, especially if it's just a routine ultrasound.
Yeah. Yeah, so wow. that's how it was diagnosed. And I actually interviewed my mom on my YouTube channel for Mother's Day last year. And she shared that story and several others and what it was like to go through all three surgeries that eventually saved my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you were born the same year that Alex was, you probably also had your surgery soon after birth.
Yeah, yeah. So my understanding is that the timeline was just a couple of days after I was born, they did the first surgery. And then the second surgery was, I believe, at 6 months. And the third surgery was a little after two or close to three. I actually have a video on my YouTube channel that goes through what tricuspid atresia is and then all the surgeries that I specifically had done. And then I explain what they did in each of those surgeries with images and explanations.
You have really become quite the advocate, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't always that way, but yes. So all of my surgeries were completed under the age of four, and the truth is that I remember very little before the age of seven. So the majority of people experience something called childhood amnesia, which is the inability to recall certain childhood memories before the age of usually four. And since I don't really recall much until the age of seven, my thought is that I basically blocked out my early memories because they were too painful, even the ones at five, six, and seven, just because I must have had residual fear of some kind. And what's remained is the emotional response to anything medical. And that's very much fueled by my time in the hospital. And the stories that I could share, such as the time that I farted and the monitors, all went crazy. And my grandmother thought something horrible had happened while she was in the room. Most of those stories are not my memories. They are stories that someone's told me over and over and over again. They've been ingrained in me, but I don't actually remember them. So, no, I don't really remember anything from the surgeries other than that residual fear that bubbles up whenever I think of anything medical related.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You're the first person I've talked to, and I've done a lot of interviews, obviously. I've done over 300. You're the first person to talk to me about childhood amnesia. Is this something that you looked up as you started to become a stronger advocate for yourself?
Yeah, so actually I was a psychology major in college. So yeah, so I have that background. And childhood amnesia is more common than you would think. And I think it throws people because of the title, childhood amnesia. Like, oh, you hit your head? No, the majority of people can't remember memories before the age of three. And since most people who have CHD have surgeries before the age of three, and for me, it was too much. And I think I blocked it out.
I've never heard that term. It makes complete sense. Mm. And it's interesting how even two children in the same family can have such different experiences. So I remember just a few childhood memories, but you're right. Most of the memories that I have of childhood were after I went to kindergarten.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. When I started studying psychology, a lot of things just were like, oh, that's what I've been experiencing my whole life, but I had never had a name for it.
Right. It's nice to have a name for it. And it's also nice to know you're not the only one. So yeah. I wonder if having that childhood amnesia, which seems to be a fairly common experience, we cannot remember every single day of our lives. Imagine what we would be doing if we could remember every detail about every day of our lives.
That, right.
It just makes sense that your brain has to tune out some of those things or just put them by the wayside. Do you think that's what made it easy for you to just kind of tune out the fact that you had a heart defect?
Most definitely, yes. That residual fear that I mentioned is a large factor as to why I didn't want to think of my condition. I was just terrified of doctors and nurses and the smell of a hospital and needles. There's that residual fear that goes along with all of that. And as I mentioned before, I'm pretty sure that I just blocked it all out and fooled myself, well, kind of, a little bit, not 100%, but I fooled the others around me into thinking that I was handling things fine. And I wasn't fine.
Maybe you were handling it fine, and that's the way that you could handle it fine. It's by your brain just putting that on the back burner, you think?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely possible, but it started to fester and become an issue, and it presented itself in really weird ways. which would normally not be connected to medical things. My mom eventually realized I was trying to cope with things when I expressed finding the majority of my clothes itchy. I wouldn't want to wear anything but loose-fitting clothing, and most of the time that happened to be sweats. And my mom eventually took me to a child psychologist for play therapy, and I have memories of that. That was when I was six, I believe, ish. And I have a few memories of that. And most of those are memories, like I said, that people have shared with me, my mom in particular. And we figured out through this play therapy that what I was terrified of was death. And kind of trying to understand that abstract thought. Because that's a lot for a six-year-old to be like, yeah. And so according to my mom, the therapist had shared with her that I had hit a doll in the sand, like a little sandbox that she had, and pronounced the doll dead. And then I looked up terrified and dug the doll back out saying, oh, she's fine. She's alive. Yeah.
Oh, wow. It makes you wonder if maybe when you were having one of your surgeries, if something happened. Like, maybe you had a near-death experience before you really had the words to put to that.
That's what I've been wondering. The only thing that I've come close to with experience anything, like, supernatural-ish would be I've had dreams of my grandparents that have passed away. And those dreams have been extremely peaceful. And it's almost like we're in a nice white room and we're just sitting in two folding chairs and we're just talking and it's peaceful. And I've dreamed that. And then I wake up and I feel really calm. That's that's the only connection I've ever had to anything supernatural. And I don't know if I had a near-death experience. So it's interesting that you bring that up because it has been in the back of my mind of like, oh, maybe I did experience something like that.
This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions expressed in the podcast are not those of Hearts Unite the Globe, but of the hosts and guests, and are intended to spark discussion about issues pertaining to congenital heart disease or bereavement.
You are listening to Heart to Heart with Anna. If you have a question or comment that you would like addressed on our show, please send an email to Anna Jaworski at anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. That's anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. Now, back to Heart with Anna.
Before the break, we were learning about Margaret growing up with tricuspid atresia. I'm just wondering if you can share what the biggest lesson is that you've learned as an adult living with a congenital heart defect.
Yeah, like most who have CHD, I experienced something traumatic at a very young age. And like most people who have something dramatic happen to them, I started to go through the stages of grieving and trying to make sense of my emotions and where they stemmed from and how to live with them. So for anyone who doesn't know, the stages of grieving are usually defined as denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And you can go through these stages in different orders, it doesn't really matter. And when I was younger, I pretended to be in the acceptance stage. I knew that I was different from my peers, but I tried to make it look like I was proud of having tricuspid atresia. You know, I would want to show my scar to everyone, which now that I look back on it, it must have been a very strange experience for my poor peers. You know, I'd be like, look! And I guess that was my way of trying to be brave, but I hadn't truly accepted it, and I still don't think I have. It wasn't until about a year ago when I started my YouTube channel that I realized that I had been in denial since childhood. So I started the YouTube channel to try and get myself to a point where I might be able to accept it, or at least be able to talk about it without feeling anxious. And I'm still not there yet, and I'm not giving myself a timeline. I'm allowing things to happen as they happen and just try to enjoy life in the meantime. And that has led to realizing the biggest thing that I've learned from having CHD is trying to live in the moment as much as possible. And I was really good at this when I was younger. I was able to push my worries aside and enjoy life. And as I got older, the conversations with my cardiologist at yearly appointments, they started to center around potential complications that could arise. And that made living in the moment a lot more of a challenge because I am terrified of what's to come. I haven't had many complications, and now I'm thinking of all these things that my cardiologist has brought up as possibilities, such as maybe having a catheterization, which I haven't had since I was 5. So my experience with the medical world has been very much monitoring for the majority of my adult life. And the most invasive thing that I've had recently, I think it was like 2 years ago, I had an MRI with a contrasting dye solution through an IV, and I hated every minute of it. And I do not like needles, and I was terrified that they were going to find something wrong. Yeah. They didn't, which was great, but I'm just crossing my fingers and hoping that I just have to do yearly checkups. But I know that for someone with my condition, it is inevitable that I'm going to need a little bit more of an invasive procedure at some point. So in the meantime, I'm just trying to live in the moment as much as I can. And I think that's what I've taken to focus on with living with CHD, is to just live in the moment.
I think that's great advice for anybody, to be honest with you. Because any day we could have a car accident, mm-hmm. we could get COVID, we could yeah. have something happen. And wouldn't it be a pity if you hadn't mm-hmm. seized the moment every chance that you could? And mm-hmm. I don't think most of us do. I think most of us put things off thinking, oh, we can do that tomorrow, such as writing a book. Most people do not actually sit down and write it out. You've done that. You've done that with your book series, The Buttercup Adventures. Why mm-hmm. don't you tell us about how you started that series and why?
Yeah, so this is a really fun story. The series began as a bedtime story. I was nannying at the time. Her name is Lucy. I still am in contact with her. I think she's 13 now, which is crazy. I started sharing these stories with her when she was 3 or 4 as a way to have getting ready for bed be more enjoyable or more of a fun task, because she didn't like doing that. So one night I said, hey, I'm going to make up the best bedtime story you have ever heard, but I'm only going to do it if you're all ready for bed. And she was so excited. The whole time she was getting ready for bed, she would ask for details about the story. And I was like, no, I'm not sharing anything until you're all wrapped up in bed. So when she was finally ready, I knelt down beside her bed, and this became a routine place for us in the evenings. And I started making up a story on the spot. I had not thought much about the characters or the plot. That night, I just started sharing the story, and that first story ended up being the first chapter of what would later become the Buttercup Adventures. And then on the third night of sharing these stories with her, I decided to record myself. And
That was smart. Yeah. See, all that recording that your mom did with you, it paid off.
Exactly. So I had a really old phone at that point. So I was using that little old phone as a recorder. It was not the best recorder, but I think I still have the recording somewhere. And you can hear me trying to tell the story. It's definitely not as coherent as it is when you read it.
Sure.
But
you had time to refine it.
Yeah, exactly. And Lucy would add details. So she was my uh-huh. little adjective wizard. She'd describe everything.
Well, that was so cool, though. She got to be part of creating the story with you.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's why she was so invested in it and having fun with it. And we just made up all the stories. And then I went back to college in the fall, and I met up with my roommate, who turned out to be an art major. And I loved her illustrations, and I said, hey, you want to go in on this project together? And she said, yes, let's do it. And we did that, and I actually just reached out to her recently because I knew that we were having this interview, and one of your questions was about
Book 4 and 5.
Yeah, Book 4 and 5. Where are those? So she took a little bit of a break, and I was completely for it because I was just graduated college, and I was like, what am I doing with my life? Where am I going? So I needed a break, too. I just reached out to her recently, and she said, yeah, let's get back into it. And she's working on the images for Book 4 and 5 right now, and the manuscripts are all done. And I just need to go through those with a family friend who's an editor, and we go through those together, and then I'll self-publish it.
I just love that. And I noticed on Amazon that you even have blog posts where you talk about the writing process, and it looked like you do some public speaking about writing at the schools. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, that's so funny that you digged that deep, because I totally forgot that I had written anything in Amazon.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you wrote a lot.
Yeah, okay. I totally forgot about that. I've done some writing workshops for local organizations such as the Boys and Girls Club, the Telling Room, which is based in Portland, Maine, and I've also done a few book signings at Letterpress Books in Portland, Maine. They are the bookstore that has supported me the most in my self-publishing. And I'm also a teacher, so any chance I get to encourage others to write, I take it. And all of the community outreach with writing has been free so far. So if any organization is looking to encourage young writers, I would love to help. And my message is always that you can write.
Right.
The most important thing for young writers is to have somebody in their corner that is sharing what they like about their writing. And from knowing what someone likes about your writing, you can know where you need to increase the good things. And maybe just by not even mentioning the things that they need to work on, you'll know as a writer, oh, maybe I'm not too good at X, Y, and Z, and I need to research how to write this or rephrase it, or just ask someone outright if you can handle the direct comment of, well, I don't think you're very good at X, Y, and Z. I just hope that there's people that are willing to support young writers, because it's needed.
Heart to Heart with Anna is a presentation of Hearts Unite the Globe and is part of the HUG Podcast Network. Hearts Unite the Globe is a nonprofit organization devoted to providing resources to the congenital heart defect community to uplift, empower, and enrich the lives of our community members. If you would like access to free resources pertaining to the CHD community, please visit our website at www.congenitalheartdefects.com for information about CHD, the hospitals that treat children with CHD, summer camps for CHD survivors, and much, much more.
Before the break, Margaret, we were talking about your books, but I also know you're a YouTuber and you have your own channel. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you started your own YouTube channel?
Yeah, this was a big decision because I was kind of throwing myself out there, and my partner really helped with that. He encouraged me to share my story and share others' stories. When I decided to start the YouTube channel, I realized that I didn't want to be anxious or afraid anymore, or I at least wanted to take steps to try and not put those feelings in a box and forget about them, but put them in a box where I could then later open up the box and be like, okay, they're not that scary, and I've been handling them kind of like exposure therapy, right? I've been forcing myself to communicate with everyone in the CHD world, to know possibilities with my condition, to know potential outcomes, to know all of these scary things that otherwise I wouldn't have wanted to know. And I'm glad that I've done it. And I was just tired of not knowing the answers to questions about tricuspid atresia as well, because I had pushed it away for so long that I hit a point where the anxiety of not knowing was worse than finding out the truth. So,
oh my gosh, that's so deep.
Yeah.
No, that's really deep. Okay, so what I hear you saying is that you've learned how to compartmentalize your feelings about your heart defect and how you want to handle it.
Yeah, yeah. So I dove into researching what exactly tricuspid atresia is and all the potential complications and future procedures. And I joined several Facebook groups and read thousands of comments from others in the CHD community. And I started to learn about ablations and all these medical procedures I had never really known about. And whenever I learn something new, I want to share it. I guess that's the teacher in me. So I decided to start the YouTube channel and share my story. And once I started the YouTube channel, I realized it wasn't enough to just share my story, because I was one person with tricuspid atresia. And everyone who has that same diagnosis is going to have a totally different experience. I just interviewed Kimberly, who has tricuspid atresia just like me, but she has lymphedema in her leg. And I just interviewed her and learned about this. And it helps me to see that, yes, I'm doing all right, but I'm gearing up for the next stage of whatever is coming in my life, because I know something is eventually going to come, whatever that may be. And just exposing myself to it has been very therapeutic. It's been terrifying, but you know, it's okay. It's helping. It's helping. And I'm not saying that interviewing people is terrifying, but
no, I understand. Just the knowledge that something could go wrong.
Right.
And here's evidence. Here's this person who actually has this thing that has gone wrong.
Yeah.
I think as a heart mom, one of the things that's hard for me is I was really broadsided when my son's diagnosis was given to me.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to be caught flat-footed like that again. So I think that's one of the reasons I love doing my program is I get to hear all these different people's stories. And if something comes up, I'm hoping that I could say, oh, yeah, well, I know this person who's had that and they're struggling, but they still are living a quality life. Or they found this to be really helpful. I almost always ask people for their advice or lessons learned, because I think that through the struggle, you usually do come upon some insight.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of my questions whenever I interview someone is, what's one thing that you've learned about yourself or others during your difficult times, basically.
And we all go through difficult times, whether we have a heart condition or not. We go through difficult times as we get older. And that's what makes us stronger, better people, I think. Mm. So it seems to me that with your YouTube channel, you're talking about your heart condition, you're learning about other people's conditions, and even some of the complications that can happen. Do you think this is helping you to get to one of your other goals, and that is writing a book where you actually have a heart warrior as a character?
I actually already have an idea for a book where the main character is a heart warrior. I haven't started drafting it yet, but it's in the back of my mind, and I'm keeping it there to just kind of ferment.
you have to do that. I do a lot of what I call pre-writing. Before I ever put pen to paper or fingers to keyboard. Today, since most of us do it on the computer. But yeah, you need that seed and you need for it to have some time to grow. So that's really cool. And I saw that you're also interested in publishing a book of essays. Maybe you'll start by contributing to my book of essays. I'm putting together a book right now called The Heart of a Heart Warrior.
Yeah, I would love to. I would love to. I'll look for all of that information on your website.
We're getting ready to close up our submission process, which I'm so excited that we're getting to that point. Before we end the program, you have to tell everybody where they can find your books. I found you on Amazon, but I know you have a website too. So can you tell us?
Yeah, definitely. So you can find me on my website. Right now, I'm not paying for a domain, so it's kind of a mouthful, but you could just type in my full name, Margaret Ellis Raymond, and the title of my YouTube channel, which is Unbeatable. You could type that into Google or YouTube, and I should pop up pretty easily. And then from there, I have links to my Instagram, which is usually just where I share photography and thumbnails of my Unbeatable videos, along with the links. And the name for Instagram is just my full name, Margaret Ellis Raymond. And then I have a Twitter, but that's really just for writing, and that's Margaret Ellis R1.
Okay, great. And for those of you who are exercising or driving, don't worry about writing all of this down. I will put all of this in the show notes, so it'll just be a click away. Make it so easy. And for those of you who don't know what show notes are, that's the description. Wherever you tuned into my program, whether it's Apple Podcasts or iHeartRadio or wherever it is that you did that, if you look at the description, I will be putting all of the links so it's easy for you to find Margaret, because I don't want you to have to hunt around. I'll make it as easy as possible. I think you'll enjoy watching her Unbeatable program as much as I have enjoyed it. And I can't wait to see your books. I need to order your books. Are they only available on Amazon?
They're not only on Amazon. And if you go to my website, there's a link for Indie Press, I think, where you can get those books. You can order them from your local bookstore.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the program today, Margaret. This has been so much fun.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. This has been wonderful to chat with you and just be part of the community a little bit more.
I know. I love that. We have such a great community. But that does conclude this episode of Heart to Heart with Anna. Thanks for listening today, my friends. Please come back next week on Tuesday at noon for a new episode. Until then, you can find me on Facebook. Just look at Heart to Heart with Anna. We love it when people leave reviews. So if you would like to leave a review of our program on whatever channel you use to listen to the podcast, that would be awesome. Until next time, remember, my friends, you are not alone.
Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you have been inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart defect community.